What's going on, guys? Welcome back. If you hate toxic and junk decks, you're going to freaking hate this week as White Widow hits the scene this Tuesday. Alex and I are going to break her down, the synergies and everything you need to know, as well as is she worth going for in her spotlight cash, Snowguard and Nico. On top of that, Marvel Snap Clans. We have a lot of data leaked information on how it's going to work. The newest feature coming to the game. Alex and I are going to break down our opinions on that as well. And then we're going to finish things off with the top 10 list of the best junk and toxic cards right now in Marvel Snap. As Alex and I rank our top 10. We're going to talk about that all today, more on this episode of the Snapchat. And as always, I'm joined by Mr. Alex Kocha. Hello, my friend. As we enter the end of April, we got a couple weeks left. How we doing?
Cozy, I got to be honest with you. I think we need to start with a Snapchat therapy session. I've had a hell of a day, my man. And I could use a little talking to because, okay, let's just set the stage here, all right? Have an incredibly busy weekend. This morning, we're getting the kids ready to go to my niece's birthday party. Okay. Now we're outnumbered, my wife and I. We have four kids. There's two of us. And so while we're putting, like, you know, the shoes on the little ones, the babies and stuff like that, our older two, they go and they run around on the grass and they play around. Now, our 5-year-old son, he's in junior kindergarten and he loves doing math, loves math. To the point that we're in the car, like, we ask him math questions all the time, like, hey, what's 5 + 3? And, you know, what's 2 + 4? And he's so excited to answer because he's working on his math. And as, you know, good parent that I'd like to be, I'm like, hey, always practice your math, little man. Practice your math. And he took it to heart. He's like, yeah, I'm going to practice my math. So this is what he did. This morning, while I was putting the shoes on, you know, our baby, and like, we're getting all ready, my son goes outside and he's like, oh, I can't wait for mom and dad to ask me math questions in the car. So I'm going to start practicing now. So he got a little stone from the road and he started etching math questions into the side of our car. And so we were, you know, just kind of getting the kids ready. We come out and he's etched like multiple, like, you know, junior kindergarten math equations into the side panel of our vehicle, like right down to the metal. And I was just like, this is why we can't have nice things.
Did he at least get them correct? Was it 2 + 2 = 4? Or did he, you know, hit you with a 2 + 2 is 5?
I think he wrote like 8 + 4 =, then started writing other ones too. Like, he hadn't answered them yet. He was setting up the page on the side of our vehicle. So that's what my day's been like.
Okay, no, this reminds me of, I went to, it was like one of the first times I was meeting Ben Brode. We went up there to do, I think it was the Loki shoot, and he drives a Tesla. And I was like, ah, oh, cool. Like, nice Tesla. What are all of these marks on the side? And I mean, it just looks like someone just like, same thing, just like took, and he's like, my kids, man, my kids. So, I mean, you're not alone, all right? It's a badge of honor. Pour one out, guys, for Alex's car. And what a way to bring in the Monday, buddy, outside of your car. How you doing, man? How's your snap going?
Oh, it's been great. I think that, you know, I've been experimenting with a whole lot of different decks, and I kind of like where the meta's at. If you, Marvel Snap seems like it's in a bit of like this, like, you know, this like treadmill mode of like, hey, we got this cadence of releases down, and I'm really hoping that the next few patches can really shake things, some things up, not just from like a gameplay perspective, but from like a feature perspective. I'm really looking forward to Marvel Snap improving as a game. Yep. And so I think right now we're kind of in like this treadmill mode, and I'm hoping for a nice injection of fun.
It kind of reminds me of, I don't play a lot of it, but Fortnite. And why I say that is, like, when Fortnite came out, they knew they had a really good game, right? And the gameplay, the core gameplay was great. So they just did a lot of cosmetics. They didn't change a lot up because the core gameplay was good. And they would introduce new things every now and then, kind of like we get new cards. But then after a while, it was like, all right, you have your fundamental. Like, it was the building thing. I couldn't even keep up with the kids. But the building mode, right? And then after a while, they were like, let's do something drastically different. We need to really change some of our core identity. And they actually, I believe, took away the building mode. And then it was just like Fortnite was much different moving forward. And now it's a completely different game. And they kind of pivoted from just having just that one great game mode. And I kind of feel the same with Snap, right? Like, we've had, Snap is just a fun game, right? And you bring in new cards and it's extremely maintaining that fun. But I agree, man. I'm ready for a new feature. I'm ready for a new game mode. Like, we're about to head into summer. I think it's the perfect time to introduce that. Today, we're going to be talking about Clans, which I think is a nice seasoning, but we need the full dish as well. And so I'm excited to break all that down. Maybe we can talk more about it when we do talk about Clans here as the second subject. We've got some new leaked information. But on Alex's side, what are we talking about?
Cozy will be discussing the Red Guardian, giving our review and our impressions on this first week of Red Guardian gameplay. We'll also be discussing the top 10 worst cards in Marvel Snap. This is going to be a really fun discussion. I can't wait to get into it. And then finally, of course, our Snapchat mailbag.
Well, buddy, let's get right to it. We've had a couple of these weeks happen before where we've got like a junk or toxic card come out. And this kind of reminds me, it's eerily similar of as we were going, I think, towards the end of November into December. Junk was like on the rise. It was hot. We know we've got an OTA later, you know, coming up this week. Clogged decks and junk decks are already at a really good and competitive spot in the game. And if you play them even more so, you're going to be freaking out about White Widow, I think. Guys, if you don't know, White Widow is a 2-cost, 2-power card. On reveal, she's going to add a Widow's Kiss to your opponent's side of this location. And the Widow's Kiss is going to have an ongoing ability that it's going to be -4 power. The only way to turn this off is to fill your own side with 4 cards. Alex, let's go to kick it off. We'll talk about the spotlights and all, but hit me with no synergies, nothing, just a simple star rating.
Simple star rating, I'm going to go with 3. But that is like a 3 where I'm like, I can see myself missing low here. But like, the more I've thought about White Widow, the more I'm comfortable with the 3-star rating.
You know what? I don't want to overrank her. And I kept going between 3.5 and 4. A bit of me wants to go towards the top end on 4 just after kind of looking at where Junk is. Her biggest ability, what we'll go into here, being the cheapest way to clog a lane at all. And only being 2-cost. We love our 2-cost cards. But yeah, I'm probably going to settle around 4 and aim a little high on this week. And guys, let's go ahead and talk about the spotlights before we get into it, Alex. So we got Snow Guard and Nico, which, you know, double up 1-cost cards here. Not bad cards if you don't have them, for sure, especially on the Nico front. And if White Widow ends up delivering, I think you ultimately have a pretty good week.
Oh, for sure. Like, I actually really like Snowguard a lot. And even outside of Loki decks at times, I think that Snowguard's probably underappreciated for what it can do, like, with its actual Bear and Hawk. But overall, like, I think these are 2 really good cards. They're definitely worth having in your collection. And they're also 2, I mean, I think for some degree, like, in Loki, your Snowguard is going to be replaceable. Like, something like an Agent 13 can almost do it, right?
Yeah.
But not really. But, like, Nico is irreplaceable. Like in so many different decks, whether you're playing Phoenix Force, Destroy, or pretty much anything that Nico seems to get splashed into, Nico is like a 5-star card that I think everyone needs to have in their collection. So for that reason only, I think you should be rolling for sure.
Yeah, I think next week we should do like a, I know we're doing the worst cards on your side, but we should do like cards you have to have in your collections and ones you don't have to. Not necessarily they're bad, but you can kind of miss. And I feel like Snowguard's good, but like replaceable. Whereas Nico, I would probably put as a top 10 most important card to have in a collection. Like, it's just that impactful across decks. So, yeah, if you don't have Nico, guys, now's the week to do so. But let's talk White Widow, man. Let's talk about the card in general. Why give it a 4? Why you give it a 3? And we'll start with, obviously, the synergies here. I mean, right off the rip, man, she's gone through some iterations here. But, hey, the cheapest way to fill a location on turn 2, that alone, all the way up until probably turn 6. I would say even turn 5 has a lot of value, if not more value. That is where I like her. I think the ability to clog a lane, we have seen it before, and now some new scene synergy that she'll have with some cards that we just had released. That's where I have her high, man. An instant space throne, an instant lockup when they're trying to do a Hope Summers thing. That's where I think the value is going to be with White Widow.
It is really impactful to those bounce style decks. They're not even just bounce, like this, like the Silky Smooth style decks that run like the Angela's Kitties and stuff like that, because you just run out of space so fast. And the thing I was thinking about as well, synergistically, was like, okay, how do you make a location not necessarily like full? Because like, I know this, you want to encourage them to play there.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, what if you just make that location useless and they're like, no, that's gone. I'm not even going to try. Like, if you do like a turn 2 Widow's Kiss and then a turn 3 Green Goblin, like, okay, the Green Goblin's helping them set their, you know, -4 back to 0. But the location, that's 2 cards that are completely useless. Like, yeah. At best, you can leave the space open and drop, like, a Red Hulk there, right? And hope to gap that power. But there's a good chance you're just like, okay, that location's just gone. Like, the 2 cards are already occupying it in negative fashion.
Dude, that's how I feel about, like, Hobgoblin. If I get Hobgoblin, I'm like, it's done. Kill it now, it's over. Like, the Void, I try to come up with maybe. But Hobgoblin, I always just know it's too late. Too little, too late. And that's why I think she's going to be good, dude, because to your point, she curves so well. That 2 is just a perfect curve. And then if you draw her late, as we've seen, she doesn't have some of the effects that these other cards do, where it's okay to play her late outside of maybe turn 6. And sometimes even turn 6, so long as they, you know, haven't played a lot of cards, you get that guaranteed -4. So I do agree. I think you can use it on the offensive like that. But what's also cool is if you want to play defensively and you pair up with something like Shang-Chi or even Killmonger, let's say they've got, you know, a Magneto on that lane, but they're still they're winning. They got a lot of cards there. Maybe they have like a couple of eight power cards. Your Shang-Chi all of a sudden is destroying the biggest card. It's opening the slot that was full, and it's putting negative four now. So you're getting this massive swing, and that's where I think the combo play is really going to start snowballing with Widow.
Oh, for sure. I mean, there's so many like macro considerations with this card. Like the more I thought about like the play lines and how you'd approach actually getting this into a deck and being effective with it, the more I realized that like the card has potential, even if the location does get filled and it's only a 2/2 and the zero cost, the zero power thing is zero power. But ultimately, if you think about this, right, you play Nebula into a lane, right? Yep. Nebula's going to tick up if they don't play there. You play Widow's Kiss into another lane, or the White Widow, I should say. Now they're like, okay, well, this negative four sitting here, I have to fill this location eventually. But if I fill there, I can't do anything about this Nebula. It's going to tick up over and over again.
Yep.
Similarly, you can go do something like, okay, you play, you know, the Hood on the left. You play Widow's Kiss in the middle, and then you play a Sentry at some point. They can't fill the void. They can't block off the Hood. They can't do it all, right, Cozy?
Yep, and that's where I think it's going to, like, even Lizard to a degree, right? Like, you have all these cards that they can't deal with. They're going to have to pick something, and then you're going to have more tools to keep on punishing them, right? So if they do pick a lane, you could just make them choose that wrong lane, right? Like, let's say they pick fill in the middle lane. That's when you go with the Green Goblin play or whatever, and they're just like, what do I have left in the arsenal? And that's where, outside of a couple archetypes we'll get to, I agree, man. Even something like Storm, you can simply just play Widow into Widow's Kiss, Storm it up. They cannot fill that in time, and it's negative four. You have three more turns to win one other lane. I mean, that's massive. I think that's such an easy way to get huge value out of her. And because of that, just alone Storm. But I'm telling you, I think the Kingpin move kind of synergy is also really unique and interesting. So if you play a Kingpin deck and you want to pair that up with Polaris, and you want to pair that up with cards that are moving back away from that lane, maybe they're trying to fill it and you're moving cards from the lane they're trying to fill, but also pushing more negative power on them. I think it's disgusting.
That's actually five head. I like that. That's pretty cool. I hadn't considered Kingpin and the ability for you to like disrupt their ability to like fill that location with Juggernauts and Polaris and stuff like that. That's a good call, Cozy.
Yeah.
Now I got one more synergy I want to mention here as well. That is like, I think is pretty good. And you kind of brought it up in some degree with the Storm, but I want to add something to that because it's part of my little list of play patterns. So turn two White Widow, turn three Storm. On turn four, you could sneak a Crossbones there. Because you are most certainly winning that location. You won't be able to, they won't be able to play Shang-Chi into it on turn five or six unless they play a War Machine or something like that. But ultimately, you're going to have like this super powerful lane that they really cannot compete with. So I actually think that might be pretty cool too.
Yeah, and like we haven't seen, like people have done the math and like, okay, if you do Hood and then Grandmaster, let's say, you're spinning two for another demon. Okay, and then it's a 2/6. You got to work out the math there a little bit. But I think Grandmaster, I know we always think like, okay, hey, more on reveals. Talk about a tremendous freaking double hit. I mean, getting two Widow Kisses over to their lane, even on turn four, and you play two and two. You just put them both down. The panic, like at that point, it's like, what do? You have two negative four lanes. You played four power to put out essentially, what, 10 power of total overall value. So I think Grandmaster has, to an effect, a pretty good chance to also synergize with her. There's just a lot of different combinations, and I feel like Junk already has that, where you can just punish them no matter what decision they're doing and no matter, you know, what they are playing. So for that reason, I think she's got a lot of tremendous value there. What about Cannonball? I think Cannonball, we were both kind of low on. I've been playing a lot more movement-style decks, and he's fitting right in there pretty well. We finally have another card for him to work with as well.
Yeah, because they could fill the location and then get knocked into it or something like that. Or B, you can use Cannonball to displace a card in that location and then, cause the negative four to happen on the ongoing card. Yeah, I like Cannonball. And Cannonball's one of those cards that like is kind of aging like fine wine a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, he still is occasionally kind of awkward to play around. But you're seeing some archetypes come up where like, okay, wait, Cannonball's actually pretty decent here. The disruption is pretty good here. And it's not always the destruction effect, but sometimes it is also the destruction effect, right? You get an opportunity to destroy their biggest power card, and that can't be understated. In fact, if you have given up initiative, it almost feels similar to a Shang-Chi play, but with 8 power, or like an Elias play, where if they're playing their Red Hulk, it comes down and it just gets knocked into a Professor X location or whatever, right? Yep. So Cannonball's tricky. I think it's a high skill cap card, and it has its moments, and it has its frustrations, but I think that as players continue to play more of it, just like I have, and you mentioned as well, it looks like it's starting to shine a little bit.
And I think he's the perfect example of what I mean by you punish them no matter what. Like, even if they do the correct thing and they fill that lane, then Cannonball is going to have something to say with that, right? So, like, with the movement package and then with the junk cards, there's just so much going on. I've been playing a fair amount of control with Daredevil again, and I also think Daredevil's a really cool card with Widow's Kiss and just this package. It makes it brain dead easy to read what they're doing and then just adjust accordingly, right? So if they have two lanes or three cards and you see on turn five they're doing one lane, it's a simple Widow Kiss on another potentially and to either clog or put the negative four or play Cannonball, and you know they only have so many lanes that are full. Like, there's a lot of reaction cards that you can play in turn with Daredevil as well. It makes it a bit easier. Alex and I are going to talk about some great junk and toxic cards if you guys have been out of it for a while. But it's going to be, listen, it's going to be a week full of this stuff, which also means it's going to be a week full of Destroy and a week full of Annihilus, right? The two easiest ways to handle all the stuff coming right at you. And so I know people who just, they're just thrilled to do it. Will this finally be a card, Alex, that brings Jean Grey some potential?
Possible. It's definitely possible because, I mean, like, there's been a lot of hopium huffed for Jean Grey in the past. A lot. I mean, you've huffed so much medical-grade hopium for the entire community on Jean Grey at times.
Lethal.
Some of the best variants in the game. Would love for this card to be relevant. And it, in theory, has such a powerful control effect. But that, it, but Kitty Pryde and everything else that's come out has just laughed in Jean Grey's face. But maybe, just maybe, having that disruption element where you play the White Widow's Bite into one location, you Jean Grey another one, and they're just like, well, how the heck am I supposed to? Like, that's the thing, right? You got Nebula in one lane, you got White Widow in the other, then you got Jean Grey in the middle, and they're like, what am I supposed to do?
Yeah, and that's where, ultimately, the problem I find with Jean Grey, I do enjoy her a ton, but when I try to make a control build built around her, Storm and her, just, I don't like them in the same deck. It's weird to have them both in the hand sometimes. It's cool having the either or, but I almost always pick Storm, right? You have location control and she's doing a lot of the same effect of what Jean Grey is. You can just pick up to win a lane a little bit easier. Jean's obviously differently, but the way it curves out just feels nicer and less punishing. But I agree here. If you're able to play Jean and then you're able to get that Widow's Kiss off, that negative four, they're not going to be able to get rid of that. And then you just have to focus on that one lane, most likely the Jean Grey lane, which most of the time you can just win. Shang-Chi, Negasonic, you've got cards out of that are, you know, built to win against it. So I do think Jean has a possible place here. It could be edged out by Storm. She could, but that's my initial thought there. I do have a couple other synergies, but I want to hand the floor to you. Anything else you want to say on Widow?
Yeah, one thing I wanted to mention was Ravonna. And I think this is like kind of like a synergy that might not be inherently obvious, but it goes back to what you were mentioning about Grandmaster. If you think about what Ravonna can do, Ravonna synergizes with the Goblins and so many other packages, but mainly it's going to synergize with that Grandmaster. That means that you can play Ravonna on turn two, and then on turn three, you can play both the White Widow and Grandmaster, and then on turn four, you can play Hobgoblin.
Ooh.
That is a very aggressive line. Like, that's a snappable line, and I think that when, like, you start to notice these specific patterns that are snappable, right, I think that's a key thing, right? In Marvel Snap, you can have win rate, but the cube rate's important too. And when you have cards that really illustrate, like, oh, this is a snappable moment, I think that helps with the power. And I think, like, for instance, Red Guardian has a couple of those moments. And a lot of major, good, high-impact cards have those moments, right?
Yep.
And I feel like Ravonna with White Widow creates a play pattern where you're at such an advantage. I don't see how your opponent can really catch up.
Yeah, discount disrupt is what I used to call it back in the Ravonna days. And I loved pairing that with Darkhawk. And I would have this, you know, I could start with Korg if I wanted to. And then it too would be great to get Ravonna out there. If not, we have some other options. You could even go with White Widow now. Great two to curve in there. Then Rock Slide. And then you can kind of work your way down while you're disrupting. You're pushing stuff on them. And just, it's punishing. But you know what, dude? As we headed into November to December, there was one deck that we were all worried about. It was getting way too good. Junk was powering it up way too much. You remember the deck?
No.
It's okay. Werewolf by Night, man. Werewolf by Night with the junk package. Do you remember the chaos of all the cheap on-reveal junk packages? I think this could finally be a time where he could come back with the bounce package. Okay, with Beast. We have a brand new Beast ready to rock and roll. White Widow's an on-reveal. And we've got this Beast bounce junk package again with Werewolf by Night. I actually think it's got a shot to return to the meta.
It's possible. I actually was doing some experimentation with Werewolf by Night. And I'm like, this is actually kind of better than I remember. Losing Zabu hurts it a lot though, because I feel like Zabu, Werewolf by Night 3, and then on 4, you start doing all your chaos was kind of fun. I don't know, man. I think Werewolf by Night might still need some love, but I totally see where you're coming from. And I like the idea of like, okay, hold on. Not only are you activating Werewolf by Night, but you're junking them with your bounce pieces as well, right?
And it's cool because
that shell is likely to have something like Annihilus as well. So you got like the hood, and you have like the Falcon, then you put like the hood down, then you're beasting it, and you're hooding again, and then you're throwing it over with Annihilus. Werewolf is bouncing all over the place. White Widow's doing her thing.
Yellow Jacket's a great card there.
There's a lot of opportunities there. So I think it's going to be really complex.
Yeah, last time I played him was with the Thor deck. A lot of fun. It was great. You could do Jane to get the Yellow Jackets and things like that. I think it could get even crazier here. Maybe he gets loved in the OTA. The other thing I want to say about White Widow is, anytime you have a card that can win you a location single-handedly, and yes, we want to just say Space Throne, it's legit a turn two Space Throne winner, which is crazy. Nobody's playing Space Throne on turn two. But on top of that, there are just other locations. You just don't want to have that other card there, and it's hard to fill up. It's hard to be playing into, and it's punishing. Like, for example, let's say Quantum Realm, right? You push that negative over there. Now this guy has to play in there to fill it up, but it turns his cards to base power two, but maybe that messes up his power play, right? Like, there are more punishing locations than people are thinking about. There are ones that obviously like are even playing fields, super flow, things like that is going to make it a bit more even, and you can just kill the energy for both of you guys. But the power and the effect to have that at any time, you know, just can't be understated. Angela, huge way to punish Angela, Alex. Huge way to punish Hope Summers. Galactus, the three huge cards that are doing phenomenal in the meta. White Widow is a two-cost answer to those.
Yeah, it also destroys like something like a Bar Sinister as well, because it's very unlikely someone's playing on Bar Sinister on turn two. If someone snaps on you on Bar Sinister turn three, you know that the Green Goblin's coming, right? Like, you understand that. But with Widows, but the White Widow, that's a turn two play. And if it's revealed in the first two locations, like, no one's expecting that. Like,
exactly.
No one's expecting White Widow to come down. And even though, like, there's only ones there, like, no one's playing a turn two Lizard into the Bar Sinister, right?
No.
So, I mean, I think that could be a good way of stealing cubes as well. We would be remiss not to mention Man Thing. I think would be a really good combo piece with this as well. Obviously, you're encouraging them to kind of zoo into that location. It's going to impact the Widow's Kiss, right? Because it's under, no. Because it's not a 1, 2, or 3 cost. So Widow's Kiss wouldn't be affected by Man Thing, would it?
Yeah, since it's a 0. But you know what? Because I was also going down, I was sad because in the Black Widow movie, you have Red Guardian and a little bit of White Widow. And I'm like, oh man, are we going to have synergy there? But no, he does the negative 2 power and he turns her off. So you kind of, right? Like you're having negative 2, but no chance for negative 4. And they can also disable it. So it's kind of both. Also, her fellow Widow, Black Widow, right? Going from 2 to 3, naturally, these people can be like, oh, I want to put my Widow's Kiss, you know, or Widow's Bite on the Widow's Kiss lane. But to your point, man, that's burying that lane. That lane's going down, you know, pretty quickly. So there's some synergy there. And it's funny you bring up Man Thing. We'll talk about him down there. And just kind of his awkward, you know, place here in Snap altogether. But yeah, anything else on White Widow? I mean, I think we covered a lot. There is a fair amount of archetypes outside of just junk. Again, there's balance, there's control methods. Black Widow, when she was 2, was everywhere. Remember that buff? Yeah. I mean, she was in every deck as just a nice fill card. And that's why I give her 4. I feel like she is going to be strictly on a couple archetypes, but she's just going to be a good card.
I do have one more card to talk about, but I will say, though, you are right. Remember when everyone's like, hey, no one plays Black Widow. We need to buff Black Widow. And then I can just picture, like, Glenn being like, okay, you guys want Black Widow? Here you go.
Right.
Here you go. Be careful what you wish for. And everyone's like, oh, my God, Black Widow is so annoying. It's like, right. Of course it was, damn it. What'd you expect to happen when we buff Black Widow? Yeah. Like, what'd you expect to happen, man? The one thing I'll mention, though, is I think Professor X. Professor X is what we're talking about. It goes into the Ravonna shell. But most importantly, it prevents them from filling that location. Yep. So Professor X comes down. That Widow's Kiss is just going to stick as a -4.
And naturally, Cannonball loves Professor X as well. And even things like Juggernaut, where you can predict, you know, where you're going to put the cards a bit more. So yeah, I agree. Pro X fits kind of right in there. And no question about it. So a lot of good use cases for Widow's Kiss. I think Beast and Grandmaster ways to multiply this effect is going to just be nutty. You're probably going to hate this week, and if you do, just play Destroy. Honestly, that's going to be your best bet, and even then, it's not exactly easy, but it will be better to handle all the craziness. You could also play a Nihilus decks and let the negative 4 happen and then go off there. Just a good package altogether. But yeah, I agree. I think she's going to be a ton of fun, and with that, we're going to head into our next subject. Last subject we'll talk about is junk toxic combos, things that we have done in the past, but I want to start our next subject, Alex, with Marvel Snap Clans. Now, we got some new information on this. I know we've been teased it a couple times. We've been talking about it, what seems like forever. And keep in mind, guys, this is not final. This is just kind of what we have seen in the old data mines. And this would be fun to kind of break down and give our thoughts on. So let's start out, first of all, clans, buddy. The official name is either teams or alliances, I guess, are currently limited to 25 members. So that is its first look at of how much people can be in a clan. To me, that feels really small. I get why they're going small, because some games have done that to success. If you get too big, it gets chaotic. But thoughts there?
Super small. Way smaller than I expected. But I can see the strategy. Like, for us, I think, like, we would have benefited from larger clans because we have the ability to generate kind of, like, you know, excitement and kind of engagement with larger sets of people. But for the average player, it's like, I want to set a clan with me and my friends and maybe make it joinable by other people that are just looking for a fun place to join. 25 feels like a right number. So it's like one of those things where, like, I think that we could maybe be like, 25. We could have been going for like 100 or even more, right? But realistically, for the average person who's, you know, wanting to engage with clans, 25 is probably a decent number.
I feel like 25 would have been a good number to say, okay, you need this much to get, like, clans really benefiting the rewards, but you can go higher than that as well. Like, there's tiers to it, I guess, potentially, but then maybe no one's doing 25 at that point. It's kind of, it seems a little small. I don't even know who I'm going to, like, what is your clan name? Obviously, it's going to be what, the Costco Black Cards, or what do you got?
I'm not even sure yet, because I didn't even know anything about the system yet. And I was hoping that it was going to be larger than this. Yeah. I was hoping that, like, there's going to be able to have, like, one singular clan kind of, like, under the umbrella of, like, the you know, the Alex family of some sort.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It doesn't look like that's going to be able to happen at 25. So I'm not sure. I still have to kind of make a plan for how I'm going to approach this.
There's pros and cons, and because if you do need to orchestrate, like, a strike, right, and everybody needs to play Deadpool at this particular moment, it's a lot easier to communicate with 25 people. On the flip side, it's a lot more strict. So we'll have to figure that out, guys. Start dropping your applications down below to join Alex and my clan. There will be clan-wide bounties and rewards, as well as personal bounties and rewards. So, like, probably to what we, guessed here, play Baron Zemo and, you know, steal your opponent's cards or recruit them 25 times. And then the clan, it'll probably say 500 times, right? And so you do it yourself to get personal rewards, which, let's just go ahead and note that the best part about this coming out is just more ways to get currency and passive things on Snap, credits and gold, naturally, I'm sure. And then you have, the clan-wide thing. To me, this is great. I think this will be fun, especially if they make the bounties, like, more on the fun side, you know?
There's something worth noting, though, and I think that there's going to be people out there that are probably somewhat anxious about the idea of the social interaction of clans. Like, if there's only 25 people and you want to get the rewards of being in a clan, it might be stressful to join a clan and then, like, let's say you take a week off and then you find out you got booted because you weren't finishing enough missions and stuff.
Oh, it happens.
And now you're missing out on rewards, or you're missing out on currency or whatever. I can see people being anxious about that. Like, I can see clans being one of those things that, like, people are like, hey, listen, like, I'm playing a mobile game. I kind of want to be a Lone Ranger. How can I access some of these rewards? And I wonder if they have kind of a solution for that, because I think that might be a real concern.
So it happens. I used to play a game called Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes, and there would be, like, the more dedicated your clan was, the more rewards you got, right? But it's a mobile game and people have just different playstyle interests. And so, I was in a clan that was, like, super dedicated. And I was like, I got to back out. I don't have time to do this all the time and be on Discord multiple times a day or whatever. It was a lot of different things you had to do at once and a lot of, like, time commitment, right? So there's, like, essentially there are clans for each type of person. Like, the ones that don't play, don't expect anything. My hope is the way they structure the rewards, there is no FOMO built into it or anything like that. Or even, like, if they take a couple days off, this person's not going to be punished or whatever. And if they are, then, I would say you join a clan that's just way more laid back. In one end, I see merit in them rewarding clans that are, like, more dedicated, if you will. But also, it needs to be pretty accessible. And you don't want to bring a feature in that brings a negative feeling.
Well, absolutely, 100%. Like, it needs to be something that improves the game. And, like, thinking back, I remember when I used to play World of Warcraft, which I played a ton of at the time, just like so many people did, I'm sure. One of the things that got me coming back was not World of Warcraft itself. Like, I was not playing World of Warcraft because of, I got to get that next purple, or I got to go into this temple or whatever it is, or do a raid. I was coming back because of the social connections I had made. I still have friends from Warcraft guilds from 15 years ago that I still have to this day because of those social connections. And I think that it's really a rewarding experience in the game. And if we can build that into Marvel Snap, I think it makes Marvel Snap more sticky because, you want to You want to perform for your guildmates. You want to perform for your clanmates. You want to get those rewards together. And if it does foster a positive environment, it's another reason to log in. It's another reason to be involved in the overall community. So it can definitely be a good thing. And maybe they iron out some of the rougher edges over time. But, you know, I really hope that this is a very positive experience overall, and I'm sure it will be.
The way they could do that too is just introducing like profiles and being able to see like Alex's top five variants and what he plays with the most and when you're online, stuff like that. Like that's the stuff that encourages, right? Obviously playing in clans, playing with friends and having that alignment. And that's the hope. I want there to be more than just these like kind of missions. And if they give you great resources, cool, but you know, it'd be cool to go all in on the actual like playing with your friends type of feel. It looks like you can also apply tags to your clan to make them more easable or findable. And so that's probably where, you know, the whole like casual clan or like, you know, whatever. You can also put a floor on the highest ranked achieve. So you can have infinite only clans. You can also have, you know, a collection level dedicated to clan as well as the floor. This is probably more for this, you know, the sweats, the tryhard clans, if you will, you know, or just to, I don't know, keep out, you know, new players or something like that. I think it's important to have that. I don't know if everyone would use it though.
You know what? I think that there's merit to that to some degree. Like, I don't like that there's like exclusionary factors in it. Like, I think it should be something that brings people together, not necessarily keeping people apart. But at the same time, like, for instance, a system that was implemented in Dota 2 is very similar to this, where you have like the clan missions and then individual missions to get points and stuff like that. The way they implemented it was the more points generated by persons in guilds and also by the guild in general actually went to a guild leaderboard. So there's a chance that they might be implementing like, hey, an actual leaderboard for clans based on how many missions are being completed, how many people are like, oh, milling out of an opponent's deck and earning points for that action as a whole guild or a whole clan. I'm using the terms interchangeably. Yeah. But I do think that like it could be interesting because if you want to play guilds competitively and there's a guild leaderboard, then maybe you want just infinite players or people who, I mean, how do you even do that? There's a season reset and everyone gets booted off of the guild immediately. Like,
yeah, right. The floor. I think really in general, man, the cool thing about clans coming out is we now are having a feature to have like our accounts talk to each other in a way. And like the momentum building on that could be awesome. Like the ability to, I'm not saying this would happen, but trade boosters one day or whatever, like things like that. Like we're having this integration of our accounts now. And at least speaking from the past, when Second Dinner, you know, they're slow. I got to say, they're slow on getting features out. But when they get them out, they're really well done. And my hope is that they have just polished this to, you know, absolute perfection. And we've got ourselves a pretty cool system. We'll have to find out, wait and see. But that's right now, that's the main stuff that we know about it. It should be coming pretty soon. You know, I would imagine they want to do clan battles and things like that. That's definitely where I probably see them taking this, which is pretty cool, man. Pretty cool. If you had 25 members versus 25 and, you know, you play all of each other, play each other once or something and you get the total, you know, winning bracket, that kind of stuff's a lot of fun.
It would be a lot of fun. Hard to organize, maybe. Unless, like, you can do it, like, at different times. Like, you have a week to play your matches.
Yeah, it'd have to be, like,
from someone in the other guild.
72 hours.
Even then, at 25 people, that would probably be hard. But I like where your head's at, though. It's an argument for making the guilds bigger, damn it, so we can have better matchmaking amongst the guild versus guild system. Yep. I'm using guild over and over again. It's clans. Why do I keep saying guild? I'm not sure.
And, like, in the game I played in the past, like, that they would lock new, like, there would be, like, three or four new cards that were, or new characters that were only able to get if your clan was good. I don't want them to do that. They definitely shouldn't introduce anything, but even something like a variant where you're like, oh wow, they definitely do that, or maybe they finally get into different card backs or effects or things like that of that nature. So we'll have to see, man, and drop down what you guys think we should both name our respective clans down below. We're gonna head into our last subject here, Alex, and that is going to be the top junk and toxic cards. Now Alex and I made a list, we checked it twice, and you know, this one wasn't too hard. I feel like of all the archetypes to put together, we wanted to revisit the toxic archetype, the junk archetype, if you will. And if you guys haven't played in a while, you know, give our thoughts on the ones that, you know, the cards you should definitely be including in your decks. Alex, you want to start us off with some honorable mentions?
Cozy, I think we talked about Man-Thing prior. I think it's a good opportunity to bring him up again. He's kind of underperformed with regards to being a core toxic card. This should have been a card that really elevated the toxic archetype. It just didn't. It just absolutely didn't. And I think part of it's because of its reciprocating effect on your other board. So you have to play something like a Luke Cage. If you don't draw Luke Cage, things get really awkward really fast. ultimately, Man-Thing's been a bit of a disappointment. It's had its moments where it's like been placed into decks, but then it gets cut because there's always more optimal lines, right? So I think Man-Thing is worth an honorable mention, but that won't hit our top 10 here.
Yeah, risk-reward factor, I think we go back to time and time again. It's just, it works out. It's cool. It can definitely work. You can win with it. But there is going to be situations where like you're kind of screwed because that's all you have left in your hand and you deck 12 cards. Not easy to get together. We also talked about the high Evo cards. We're not going to put them in today's list. You know, they are toxic and junk to an effect. Cyclops, obviously, and whatnot, but not quite, you know, the new Wasp do a negative one. Not quite toxic junk that, you know, we're talking about today, but Cyclops would be near the top of that list.
Yeah, and another one worth noting that doesn't make our top 10 is going to be Viper. Viper is one of those cards I think, like, despite going to a 3-5, which feels like a good stat line, it can be really awkward to play. Like, you can't play it on turn, like, 6 often because you're like, oh, I'm going to kick over my whatever, right? Like, I don't want to kick over something that I actually want on my side of the board, so it can be a little awkward. Yeah, you can, like, kick over, you know, a Void or a Hood or something like that. But then again, is the Hood just by itself or is there another card there? It can be awkward at times. It does feel like a snappable moment when you have, like, the Savage Lands and you kick over a Raptor and their location has 3 Raptors sitting there. That feels really good. But those are far between, like, you don't often get an opportunity to do that. So I found that Viper at a 3-5 is often very awkward to play,
especially because she's a 3 now and Annihilus 2 costs more and you send everything that you want to send over. And so it's like, if she was a 2, it makes more sense. You got a couple, you know, you have a few turns before Annihilus and maybe you can pull something out. It just, there's other things to do most of the time, and now even more so, I would say. I miss the old Viper, and I hope they bring her back one day. Take away the 5 power, it's all good. We want the old one back. At least I think most people do. Let's go to kick it off, man. Number 10 is a card that I don't think a lot of people play. She's often forgotten, often not played unless you may be doing Galactus. Alex, though, is a big fan of her, and he's going to tell us why. Selene is our number 10.
Selene's pretty good. It's underperforming expectation. Like, when it first launched, we had some high expectations for it. We thought it was going to really do a lot for the archetype as a whole. It has not done that. However, what I will say, though, is that it does feel like a very effective play in junk and goblin-based decks because you're taking those goblins and you're basically absorbing that negative 3 power while also being very impactful on their side too, right? You're hitting something that they probably want to play. There's a reason why they built their deck the way they did. So I do like Selene for that. However, Selene can be very awkward when you're not holding something you want to hit, right? If you don't have the Hood or you don't have a Goblin and you're like, well, I guess I'm not going to play this Iron Man in my Ravonna deck this game, right?
Yeah.
That can feel really bad. But Selene as a whole, when the stars align ever so slightly, does feel like a pretty good card.
Yeah, for instance, like, you know, Hood, Green Goblin, you can hit, but if you have only like Pro X and you're playing that kind of build and you hit your Professor X, it's brutal, guys. It's brutal. And then you don't want to do Luke Cage to count it. No. So yeah, that's why she hits our number 10 list. More niche. I don't see her in a ton of White Widow decks, but maybe we'll be wrong. We do have White Widow on today's list, guys, just because we wanted to see where she would probably stack up. Number 9, we've got the Old Faithful, who I still think is underplayed to a large degree. Scorpion, man. I think Scorpion has been the staple in Snap for a while. It's just punishing on a lot of cards. Phoenix Force, you know, even things as simple as, you know, Iron Man, whatever we just mentioned. He's just good. He can counter Cerebro all by himself. Getting him out on 2, it just doesn't feel better than that. This will for sure be in my build of White Widow, if I were to guess. And yeah, I'm a big Scorpion fan.
Yeah, Scorpion's great. One of the best kind of like tempo 2 plays you can do on turn 2. Feels obviously terrible later in the game, but I think that's what holds him back ever so slightly.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, like, yeah, he gets a tremendous amount of value. Like, there's a chance they have 4 cards in their hand at the start, and like, you're literally, he's a 4-6, theoretically, right? Provided they're not able to kind of resolve the damage you've done. I like the card. I always have. And if you think the card sucks, think about all how like annoyed you are when they play Scorpion on you, and you're holding your negative cards. You're like, oh.
Right.
The stupid Scorpion, right? It's so annoying. And yes, they feel it just as annoying when you play Scorpion as well. So, wow, those sentences were a little rough on my part. But anyways, it's because Scorpion is so frustrating to have played against you. Emotional damage.
Number 8, we head to Debris, which oftentimes, man, a well-played Debris is soul-crushing. And I always want to like this card more than I do. I like Debris. I play Debris. But I feel like ultimately, like, I've seen it get cut from more lists than one. But she's punishing, and talk about with White Widow now, we're getting even more clogging, and you could go from Widow to either Debris or Goblin, and you're just starting to punch them a ton. With the rise of Hazmat, where obviously people are starting to like her a bit more, Mockingbird, you know, also has good synergy there. So Debris at number 8, anything to add to her?
Yeah, debris I like can be very awkward, and I find myself often cutting debris from decks because it's like, I'm kind of screwing myself up a little bit too. But a really well-placed debris can really shut down a lot of the meta decks, especially like the Silky Smooth style decks, where like, hey, they have a, you know, they're setting up like their Hope Summers, then all of a sudden a rock goes in that like location. And it's really frustrating because now like they don't have an opportunity to play. So I do think that like it's a very disruptive card. I like how it has the like the reciprocal effect. It makes it feel fair.
Yep.
And I like the idea that you can control where which locations are getting rocked based on where you play debris. So it has a little bit of agency, which I think a lot of people don't really give it credit for. Honestly, it's a good card. It's a good card, and I wonder if it starts to make a comeback with the release of White Widow.
Another good card, Alex, number 7. And I like him a lot more than you. I wanted him higher, but Alex, yeah, I get it. I understand it. It all comes down to how your games went with him. Dr. Octopus at number 7. I think this guy is awesome, especially in this meta and in a lot of given metas, the combo-centric ones. Listen, you can get Shang-Chi punted to the face, but if you're bringing out all their cards and they got nothing left on the table, if you have a follow-up, this guy's tremendous. I love him.
Doc Ock has had his moments. And like I have played him from time to time. He just feels like so high risk. And a 10 power, like, I don't know if the reward's there. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder if he ever gets buffed. I wonder if he's like a 5-11 down the road. Just to give him that little bit more. But he's also really not fun to play against. Like, it's one of those things we talked about, Black Widow, right? Like, oh, we should buff Black Widow. If we buff Doc Ock, that is probably a terrible idea for Marvel Snap as a game, right?
Yeah.
It needs to have that risk because, hey, listen, the one thing Doc Ock is really good at is finding Shang-Chi, of course, right?
Yeah.
However, it is very disruptive for everything that you've said. And if anything, perhaps you set up, like, you pull the Red Hulk, you pull everything out, and then you have your own Shang-Chi.
Yeah.
To actually just win on turn 6 or 5, or usually on 6, because that lane's going to be stuffed.
Yeah, I think that also with, you know, White Widow, you can pull their cards. They have no more to play to fill up the other lane. Also, just in general, you know, you can play on a lane. Maybe they have White Widow. You put White Widow down. They fill that lane up. Doc Ock's just a free 10-power card at that point, right? So, like, there is that scenario for him where it's like he's just good raw power to win off the lane if you need to. But, yeah, Doc Ock comes in at number 7. Number 6, we have Black Widow, who, when she was buffed, she was everywhere, and then they had to kind of take her back a little bit. She settled in as a 3 card. I think she's still fun. She still works out really well. Could get a lot of play right now with White Widow coming out. I think she'll be better than Black Widow is. But yeah, we have her at number 6.
I like her, honestly. And I think that this is one of those cards that is probably better than the meta would indicate. You're not seeing much Black Widow being played right now, and it's probably just because like it's just not making the meta decks. And honestly, if you start splashing Widow into your decks, it's probably going to perform just fine. Like, yeah. I don't think this card's bad. I don't think this card's amazing either. But I think that it's being slept on. It's kind of out of the zeitgeist. Like, people aren't thinking about Black Widow right now. They're going to be thinking about it next week, though.
Dude, there's going to be junk everywhere. I think Green Goblin, who is our next one at number 5, is the definition of really pigeonholed just to Galactus. And I hope that players can continue to utilize him in junk and clogging methods. Tale as old as time. Guys, Green Goblin with Ghost Spider is such a fun play because you can literally move that Green Goblin to another lane if you need to. Maybe you guessed wrong, telegraphed wrong. Just tremendous value now with a lot of these cards. And they're going to be just paranoid you're playing Galactus. You put this on the left lane and you do White Widow on the right lane and they're like, what am I doing here? What do I do? Because if I don't fill up the left lane, they could Galactus me easy. That's where I think you could play a lot of head games.
I do like Green Goblin a lot, and I often find myself playing Green Goblin over the Hobgoblin.
Yeah.
Simply because it comes out earlier. I feel like Hobgoblin's a higher risk play, so you usually want to play it in conjunction with something like a Daredevil. Because Green Goblin, is going to be space on the board. There's space on the board, you're usually able to pick your shots better. With Hobgoblin, I don't know about you, but I always want to gamble like that one slot, like, you know, just shut her down style play. And I think Daredevil definitely does help with that. But Green Goblin's great. It has everything you need. And people say, oh, but it's like, you know, 3 cost. It can get destroyed naturally, right? Carnage does a lot of damage to it. But also, like, they have to deal with it. That negative 3 power is significant. And the fact that it's occupying a slot on the board is almost detrimental to your opponent very often. So yeah, I love this card. It's one of my most played toxic cards.
And in general too, like in Conquest, like Green Goblin's still good as you play through matches. Hobgoblin, you get the one-off surprise, then your opponent's kind of like prepping for that in the future. It loses a little bit of its sting. Next up we have Matt, that I don't think would have been on this list at all a couple months ago. Definitely has risen up as we have gotten these decks that have, you know, multiple cards being played down. People often forget you just get tremendous value so long as you play her at the right time. You don't always have to have the crazy pop-off with her to make it happen, and she's just been killing it in these Surfer lists and many more.
Yeah, so Hazmat's made a major resurgence in the meta over the last little bit, and it's kind of cool. And I'm often seeing Hazmat being saved for like a Wong Miracle play style thing. And I've even played Evo decks where I'll play Hazmat out. Like if I see them starting to kind of do some stuff and they're, oh, it's a Patriot deck and they have, you know, a Squirrel Girl out and they're playing a Mr. Sinister, I'll play Hazmat on turn three. I got no problem with that. It makes my Abomination super cheap early. I got no issue with that, right? I do think that there's a lot of flexibility with this card, but at the same time, it's so reliant on Luke Cage. However, in theory, if you're doing like some sort of wombo combo, if they have more cards on the field than you do, and you got like some sort of Wong Mystique action going on, then in theory, you should be able to out-trade them based on the fact that they have more cards on the board, getting hit with this negative power. But in my experience with Hazmat is I never find Luke Cage and everything's more difficult.
Right. That takes us to number three, and that is going to be Cannonball. And Cannonball has just proven to be, yeah, as we said earlier, just kind of aging really well. He was a little bit meta-dependent, and I think the pieces that we've missed a bit are starting to, you know, come together. We have Cannonball now having a lot more utility than he had even when he came out, which wasn't that long ago. Probably a lot of people don't have him, and so unless, you know, you're just all in on the junk archetype, I would say Cannonball is not a must-have card, but really, really strong right now and just punishing, you know, altogether.
You know, I totally understand what you're saying, and I agree. Cannonball's been very good, but at the same time, it's like, when I play him, I'm like, he feels ever so slightly awkward, but you see the power potential and you see the opportunity that Cannonball can provide. And it's interesting because it's like, I believe we rated him about a 2-star card. And in that kind of moment in the meta, he definitely felt like a 2-star card. But now as the meta shifts, new cards come out, new synergies come out, the meta changes altogether and what becomes popular changes. All of a sudden, Cannonball starts to climb. He's definitely a 3-star. Is he starting to push towards 4? He's starting to change with the meta, which is really interesting. And so overall, I've come away impressed with Cannonball, but I can still see how, like, you know, people would be reserved to spend 6K tokens on him.
Yeah, that's a lot for, you know, very pigeonholed of what he does do. But that does take us to number two, and we have White Widow all the way up here. And it's just simply because she's the cheapest way to pump out clogging effects on the opponent's side. It curves, it fills in that gap that we have right now in junk. And we both just think she's going to have this impact on that archetype specifically because of the wide amount of use on both turns, locations, different counters, different decks. She's got a lot of potential, man.
She does. She definitely does have a ton of potential, and I can't wait to get my hands on the card. I think that it's going to be interesting, as I said before, from a macro perspective. It almost amplifies what you can do with some of the other junk cards. Right, because they're going to run out of options eventually on how they kind of deal with, you know, the card that's on the screen, yeah. Right? Which is like perfect, right? I really do like how White Widow is going to manipulate how your opponent can play.
Yeah, man, and I don't think it's a surprise that we have at number one is the Annihilus, the Sentry, the Hood, all kind of in one package. He's not going to be dethroned anytime soon. I think this is going to be our Junk King, kind of his role. I mean, we kind of said that when he came out. That is his role in Snap. He is the glue that finally puts Junk and toxic decks together. There was a lot of this missing, like, what do you do in this 5-slot? And that's where it was like Doc Ock, maybe Spider Woman. Nihilus filled the gap, and now he's kind of the king of that throne.
It was probably confusing to a lot of people wondering why, like, where's Hood? Where's Sentry? Why aren't these guys talking about them? It was because we wanted to kind of reserve them for like this number one spot, because realistically, this 3-card package is the ultimate package in Marvel Snap with regards to toxic, with regards to junk. And just overall in the game, like it's one of the highest performing, if not the highest performing package in the game. And so they definitely do have to go together because individually they're good, but it's Annihilus that really brings it all together. Without Annihilus, you know, you're trying to play Viper with Sentry. And we all know what that was like. It was awful, right? You could even cope a little bit and you can play like, you know, some other cards like, you know, Valkyrie with Sentry and stuff like that. We tried. We walked those paths, right? But at the end of the day, with Annihilus, with the Hood, with Sentry, it's just a remarkable package that is a potential game winner, conquest winner, tournament winner. It's everything. It's all of the above. It's just an absolutely remarkable card.
Well, we got White Widow coming out. We have the OTA later this week. Sure to be some shenanigans going on, guys. Get ready to get your carnages out if that is something you hate.
Cozy, Red Guardian has graced us in Marvel Snap this week, coming out. And honestly, I think has been pretty cool. So I'd be really interested in hearing your take on Red Guardian and what you think in this first week of your first impressions.
Yeah, man, it's tough to rank tech cards, I feel like, in the game because of A, the week they come out, like tech cards are meant to like last for a long time, right, and solve this answer. And so, like, you're trying to make decisions on a very short amount of time. But it kind of just felt like he was a tech card and then some, right, and really just brought a lot of power, brought a lot of utility, and worked in a lot more decks than I think than we originally anticipated, and just kind of nuzzled in just fine in the current meta that we're in. I love him, man. I think he's a lot of fun. I played a good amount of him the first, like, 3 days, like, a ton of them. I don't have him in, like, my current builds that I'm playing right this second, but, dude, he's good. He's annoying, too. He's frustrating to go against.
Yeah, I've liked him. I've liked him a lot. And the way I've kind of, like, described him to people, like, during Twitch drops, people, like, asking me, like, hey, Alex, should I be getting Red Guardian? And the way I described him is he is the most skippable good card in Marvel Snap, it feels
like.
Like, you don't need him. Like, you don't absolutely need Red Guardian, right? There's cards that kind of, like, do what he does. Like, Rogue is a good example of a card that can kind of similarly do what he does. But I think that Red Guardian has a much wider application and is much more often a fun or good or effective play than Rogue. And I mentioned Rogue even in the last week's Snapchat, and I feel like it's still an apt comparison. But ultimately, Red Guardian felt good to play on turn 3. It felt good to play on turn 4. It felt great to play on turn 6 oftentimes. It felt good all the time. I am landing on a 4-star rating with this card. I really liked it. I really liked it a lot. And it's hard to land a tech card that, as you said, is going to be, like, playable ad nauseum in Marvel Snap. Tech cards have a very important role in the game, but you don't want them to be completely disruptive, right? You want them to have a job to do and do that job effectively. Shang-Chi does that, but it's a little too disruptive to some degree, but it feels like a necessary evil. Was this a necessary evil? I'm not so sure.
What would you rank your top 3 tech cards at the moment? Shang-Chi being one, clearly for both of us. What's 2 and 3?
Man, it's hard to say what 2 and 3 would be. In terms of tech cards, man, putting me on the spot here. I would lean towards, like, well, obviously Shang-Chi at the top. I like Red Guardian. I do like Rogue's cube stealing capabilities. But, like, at the same time, it's like, I mean, Enchantress doesn't see much play. I feel like Enchantress could be good. I've been playing a lot of Cosmo lately. I feel like Cosmo's been really good because you're seeing a lot of mill out there, and I think that Cosmo can be pretty disruptive to that. Really good against Destroy. I like Armor for that reason as well. I think Armor's really good against Destroy, and I tend to be favoring Armor over something like a Kyra for that reason, for the offensive side of it.
Okay.
Man, it's like there's so many tech cards in the game, but
You've
at the same time, it's like they're so niche, right?
So what's your 2 and 3? I'm none the wiser after that. What is your 2 and 3?
My 2 and 3, I feel like if Shang-Chi is 1, I would lean towards probably right now. I mean, I'm playing a ton of Cosmo. I put Red Guardian at 2, actually.
Okay.
Red Guardian at 2, probably Cosmo 3 right now is where I would go. Like, I've been really liking Red Guardian. Like, yeah. I've been playing him a ton.
Yeah, I've got him at 3. So I've got Shang-Chi at 1. Probably Shadow King's my clear cut, too. I just love him in, like, the current meta that we're in. And then probably 3 Red Guardian. And then it's kind of like, yeah, Cosmo Rogue together in that kind of niche field. Supergiant, I almost have in some regards of them. Enchantress is low down on the list right now. It's crazy. Just like she's just not providing as much. And of course, yeah, you do have Armor in the right circumstances. Just curious, like, where you had Red Guardian in there as a whole, and it does show that he's pretty good in some considerations. But what decks have you been playing him in the most, man? What has been your Red Guardian deck?
The Red Guardian deck for me, without question, has been Silver Surfer. It was just such a natural inclusion in that deck. And I like that. I like when you have a card that's like you want to experiment with, you want to see, you want to run it through its paces, and you have a deck that just works. And I'll throw the deck on the screen here. For the audio listeners, we've got Nova, Forge, Okoye, Brood, Silver Surfer itself, Killmonger, Nakia, Red Guardian, which is taking the role of like a rogue prior, Hope Summers, Sebastian Shaw, Absorbent Man, and Sarah. Now, this is actually a pretty good performing deck. It doesn't quite crack the top 10 right now, but it overall is like amongst the strongest Silver Surfer decks. And it's kind of funny to think that like Okoye and Nakia are actually providing as much value as they are. I've even found myself playing Nakia on 3 and then an Absorbing Man on 4 and then having this massive Sebastian Shaw that goes along with a Sarah on turn 5 into turn 6, right? So I don't know. I've really liked the deck. And the nice thing about it is when you have Sarah on the field and you're holding, you know, the potential to play 3 cost cards on turn 6, Red Guardian can come down and just like swipe out that Dracula, take out that Morbius, take out that Iron Man against that Tribunal. It creates these snap conditions, which I think go underappreciated. And so, like, that's why I've really liked Red Guardian. He has felt like a very good play on turn 3 and a very good play on turn 6 in these Sarah Surfer decks. And so, like, I don't know. I've really, really liked my time with him. I even like him better than Rogue. Like, I'll say that straight up. He feels like he's never disappointed me.
Yeah.
And even with, like, that negative affliction power, like, he's always giving you something, right?
Yeah, Rogue has bigger upside, I think, like, overall, but the risk is way higher because then you also have the chance of doing just absolutely nothing there. And so, or just taking, like, a 50-50 on a, you know, Ravonna, Iron Man. You're trying to go to the Iron Man. We've been there, done that. Yeah, dude, I like him a lot. And the on curve plays is nice. I did that a ton in the Affliction style deck with High Evo. I thought, I love that. I love that double up with it, with the Abomination, and just completely having a blast with that deck. And that's where I was playing him a ton. But the later gameplay and doing some controlness, which I think Surfer does well, is just a blast too, man. I was doing decks where I was closing down a lane, let's say with Storm, and then it's like, okay, Red Guardian just needs to do his thing on the other lane to win. And it just feels like Surfer does that best. But yeah, I've seen him a lot there, seen him a lot in just like curve disruption decks. But the High Evo build, by far, when I can get away with playing it, is my fave.
I actually was experimenting in High Evo as well, and he was definitely good there. 100% good there. And especially when you consider that the Affliction obviously helps Abomination, and then, you know, you can get some actual legitimate magic happening. When you have, like, a turn 6 or 7, and you have, like, a free Abomination, if you've doubled it, like, with a Moon Girl or something like that, then all of a sudden, you, like, have this insane amount of power drop. Yep. Like, I had a turn where, like, literally, I skipped turn 6, and then I had a massive Hulk, right? I had a free She-Hulk, yep, and two Abominations that I had copied with Moon Girl. I didn't manage to copy the She-Hulk, but it was insane the power spread I was able to drop down, right? All while having a Sunspot on the board. So it definitely does help those archetypes.
And he just makes, man, he can make some cards feel so useless. Like you hit the Sunspot, you hit a net, like hitting a Sunspot, it just becomes such a dead card. There's so many examples of cards that he just completely nullifies and was a large win condition for the opponent. And yeah, again, that's why I think we can creep up. I think we both gave him 3.5 last week, and I am fine moving it on up to 4.
Yeah, I've liked him. I think he is a great, great release. And the reason why I really like this release too is because, like, I think he's great, and I think he's a surprise for people that unlocked him. People are like, I'm going for High Evo, and I got Red Guardian, I guess he's fine. But then you play him, you're like, okay, hold on though. Like, this card's actually pretty good. And it's not like, no one's complaining about Red Guardian. I've not seen any Twitter threads or Reddit posts be like, Red Guardian, what's Second Dinner doing? You know, like, it's, no one's complaining. But everyone that's playing him is like, okay, yeah, this is pretty good. But he's not an archetype defining card, right? No. And it's going to be interesting to see how he slots into things outside of Surfer and Evo. Like, those were by far the best two synergistic places. And I wonder if, like, even with junk, right? Even with junk, there might be an opportunity to, like, hit some stuff, right? Like, I don't know. Like, it's just, it's more negative power on their board. Maybe there's going to be an additional synergy next week that we're not really thinking about.
Largely, though, do you think, to end on Red Guardian, do you think that Shang-Chi has standalone tech card value? He could be in any deck because he's a tech card, right, Alex? But does he need a supporting member, right? And I think he's close on that edge. He reminds me of Shadow King in that front, like, where it's like, Shadow King's good, but you usually need one other to really, you know, get the defensive tools.
You're right. Like, it can be really tricky. Like, Shadow King is a kind of card, like, it's a definite snappable surprise card. Red Guardian, does it stand on its own two legs, is basically what you're asking. Like, or do you need, like, the pieces around it? I think it kind of does. But if you're making, like, a good card style deck, I don't know if it makes the cut. Like, if you're making a good card style deck, like, do you cut something like a Gladiator for Red Guardian? Like, is that something you can really cope with? You know what I mean? Like, would you play Red Guardian over the Gladiator?
Not in that style of deck. Probably not. No.
Exactly, right? So, and if it doesn't make those style of lists, and then all of a sudden you have to really rely on its synergy, right? If it's not going to make a good cards list, then it has to synergize to make sense in your deck, right? So, and in the case of Silver Surfer, Silver Surfer is just really good at having these surprising tech pieces that your opponent might not be expecting, while also having that boost up in power kind of at the end of the game there. So, I do like the card a lot, and I'm glad to hear you coming in on a 4 with me, because, like, it does feel like a 4, doesn't it? But at the same time, doesn't it feel like if you're someone who's low on keys, like, you don't have to gamble on this?
Definitely don't.
Like, I think it's not like, we talked about Nico being irreplaceable. Red Guardian kind of feels replaceable, right?
In general, I think that Snap was launched with the tech cards it needed, right? So, like, I think Rogue, Enchantress, and Shung does answer a good amount of the meta and Cosmo. Shung is Shung, and until he's not, like, there's just, like, he's a great free-to-play option over Red Guardian. But yes, I concur.
And something that you do in your videos, which I really like too, is like, what are the chances this card gets nerfed, right? Like, what is the chance? I don't think this card gets nerfed, right? No. I also don't think it gets buffed. I think that this is like a pretty safe, like, investment, so to speak. I don't see Red Guardian getting like, well, this card's a 3-1 now. Like, and you're like, what the, f-? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't see that happening at all. I think this is a very good, consistent release that I think is going to, you know, pay dividends moving forward for sure. And it just feels like a great balanced card. Like, honestly, like, kudos to Second Dinner. We need more of these. We need more of these cards that are just like good. You open them, you're like, yeah, okay, I got a fun new tool that I can use in some cool decks, but like, it's not ruining the meta and people aren't completely tilting out of their minds. You know what I mean?
David Harbour would be proud.
Who's that?
He played Red Guardian and Black Widow. Oh, you got to see it. It's great. He does a great
job.
Oh,
wait, is that, Is that the dude from Stranger Things?
That is, like, I bet you if the most Googled thing after David Harbour is the dude from Stranger Things. Like, that's how people refer to him 100%. Yes, it is. Yeah.
He was good in that movie, I'll tell you. Like, Stranger Things is one of those shows where, like, the other seasons, I was like, I don't know if, I don't even think I've watched the most recent one, but he was a great actor in it. Like, he was really good. And even in the Marvel movies with, like, Black Widow as a whole, the movie was kind of sus. Like, I was like, I watched it, and it was fine. But, like, when she, I don't want to get into spoilers, but there was a part where, like, she tries to get the bad guy, and she can't. I'm like, come on, man. Really? Like, the parents, like, what, he's got, like, some, like, mother bee pheromone or something like that. I'm like, what is this, man?
Oh, okay, all right, yeah.
That was a reach. Do you remember that part?
It's oddly vague, but yes, I think I understand the part that you're saying.
Okay, yeah, we don't want to go into spoilers, but I was just like, man, I don't know about that whole pheromone stuff. And, like, you know, isn't that what, like, the queen bee does? She, like, flaps her wings and, like, she toots on all the other workers. And they're like, we got to make a new nest. Is that not how exactly it goes?
Am I wrong? I think it is, Alex. This is not the science cast over here. Yeah, I believe it is, yeah.
Okay, well, that takes us to the top 10 worst cards in Marvel Snap. Perfect transition there,
great
by the
transition.
Way. We got Queen Bee tooting on everyone, and then we go to the top 10 toot cards in Marvel Snap. And what are you doing? What are you throwing up spoilers for?
Spoilers. Yeah, that's like, hey, Darth Vader's Luke's father. It's like, I mean, come on. We
Bro,
knew
what are you just doing?
There it
come
is
on,
again.
I
there it is again.
That yet.
I know. You haven't seen that one? Don't worry. It's not a popular movie. No one's seen it. Angel's not on today's list, is he?
Nah, he might be on today's list, but he's not in our honorable mentions, which we're going to be starting with. He's much worse than an honorable mention, Angel here. For those that don't realize, Angel's on the screen, for audio listeners, Cozy, just jumping right to the Pixel Angel to kind of just set the tone for today's conversation. Cozy, I'll give you the opportunity to start us with some honorable mentions of absolute trash tier cards that need some love or just need to be deleted.
Yeah, so honorable mentions, these are ones that I think are, they're fine, but they need love. Right. And we've talked about it to nauseam. Like, Captain America actually doesn't make today's list. We have him as he just needs a buff at this point. Right. As well as something like Master Mold, Alex. Master Mold is good, but probably the definition of pigeonholed to the one deck that he's played in. And we don't want, I can't think of much other cards that are just exclusively in that territory. And so, yeah, Master Mold's got to be an HM.
Yeah, Master Mold is pretty rough. It's actually running like a 41% win rate right now, less than 1% of the meta. It's just bad, and it's kind of crazy that the Sentinels are stronger than Master Mold when Master Mold is like the builder of the Sentinels, so to speak, right? It's just, the card just is so pigeonholed. It's so pigeonholed, and it only goes in Ronin decks, and Ronin kind of sucks as it is. And it's like, okay, how do you make this card stand on its own? We've had so many ideas about, like, oh, maybe it gets +1 for every opponent's Sentinel being played down, or maybe their Sentinels are weaker, or whatever. I think there's so many creative ways to fix Master Mold while also giving it the synergy with Ronin. I still like best that, like, Master Mold gets a buff for every enemy Sentinel that comes down and play. I think that's still by far the best solution. But yeah, definitely an honorable mention there. I also want to have an honorable mention for Mr. Fantastic. I actually recently made a deck where I was playing Mr. Fantastic, unironically. I was really, like, I was huffing pure hope.
I
had, like, crossbones in it and everything like that. I called it Fantastic Beach. It had, like, Sandman in it with Mr. Fantastic. Anyways, it came to my mind was like, you know what, Mr. Fantastic, why do I play this card when I can just play Jeff and have, like, the mobility of that 3 power ever I want? And this card's only doing 2 power into those locations. I mean, 6 as a whole, but, like, can't we, this just be, is this not the most OTA friendly card in the world? Is Mr. Fantastic at 3-3 right, not, like, the easiest choice possible? Like, am I missing this? Does Mr. Fantastic as a 3-3 destroy Marvel Snap?
Well, the thing is, so he's, what, a 3-6 right now, which, you know, is good. It's spread out, right? I think, I will say this, man. I actually enjoy him a lot in getting priority early decks. He's the best at it. Like, if you play Negasonic, if you're trying to aim for that goal of the deck, he's good at that. He does do that job well. But I do agree, he needs something. He needs something, especially for his magnitude of character. I think he could definitely, you know, be better. He's often forgotten, especially because Ms. Marvel is one more cost. I know you don't need to do, you know, the extra stuff for him, but yeah, he could probably use a little love.
Yeah, just listen, 1 power for our boy Mr. Fantastic. When was the last time you saw Mr. Fantastic?
It's been a long time, dude, actually.
See, exactly. That's my point, right? Like, no one's playing Mr. Fantastic, and we were coping really hard then as it was. And Elektra, another one that's, you know, got a recent buff to a 1-2, but seriously not seeing much play. Still think that it would be cool if it destroyed 1 or 2 cost cards. And the only time I see Elektra is when, like, some cheating bot plays it on me on turn 6 and ruins my life. But that's a whole other conversation. We've already had one therapy session today. Cozy, you want to hit us with another honorable mention?
Yeah, C2 is probably her best home. I would say lastly, especially because Valentina's coming out, it just makes Nick Fury as awkward as they come. I don't know, man. He already had his buff almost more than a year ago, I feel like now. He just isn't played well. He's just not worth playing on 4. I don't even think he needs to be a 4 cost, if I'm being honest. If Valentina's a 2 cost, I think you can effectively make him a 3 cost. And he's a 4-5 at that, by the way. Like, the old stat line of the 3 cost. Like, either give him more power, make him a 4-7 or something, or scale him back in cost. And I think I would prefer to scale him back because you have more time to react with the 6 cost cards.
You make him a 3 cost, though, that just amps the hell out of Loki. Like, Loki's just crazy now. If he's a 3-1.
Yeah.
Like, you play him into Loki and now you have 3 extra cards. Like, that's kind of the problem, I think.
That's right.
So I would take your buff over the drop in power or drop in cost. Like, as a 3-7, like, I think no one's even excited about Nick Fury. Like, 3-7, it's like, okay. Makes sense, maybe. Maybe he is better. I mean, he's obviously better, but I'll tell you one thing though. Nick Fury was done so dirty in Marvel Snap, and he was done so dirty in Secret Invasion.
Oh my god.
Everything about Nick Fury right now is just so sad. We need to bring him back up. So I agree with Cozy. 4-7. Let's get it done.
All right, man. Let's get to the top 10 list. What do we have at number 10? Worst card right now.
Number 10 is gonna be the luckiest card in Marvel Snap to be on our top 10 list, and that is Domino. Domino, the card that on turn 2 jumps into your hand. What's the line she says? I've not played Domino in so long.
Lucky.
What are the chances, does she say?
Dude, I haven't played her in so long, and if I have, I haven't had her sound effect on. It's been a minute. That's how bad. That's how you know she's deserving to be on the list. You can't even tell. I can't tell you what she says.
Man, does she say like right on time or always lucky?
Right on time. I think right on time. I think it's right on time.
Is it? Okay, well, let us know in the comments if we're wrong.
Probably
I actually
not.
Just recently played a Domino deck too. I was like delirious and coping hard, and it was bad. It was so bad. Yeah, Domino's terrible. You know, sub 40% win rate, just awful. Seeing no play. The only place it's being played is in these like bot farming Agatha decks where like people, I guess, are just like booster farming and stuff like that.
Right.
They can't even be booster farming. They're booster farming Agatha. They're probably farming like season pass points or something like that, which messes up all the stats. I don't know what the hell's going on with these Agatha lists, but that's the only place you're seeing Domino, like, not ironically. Do you have anything nice to say about Domino?
No. The nicest thing I have is, let's just move on to number 9. Spare all for right. more.
We can move on to number 9. We'll spare Domino here. Number 9, Cozy, is, you know, it pains me to have this card here because I've spent a lot of time thinking about Kang the Conqueror. Number 9, a 37% win rate and a 0.2% of the meta. And that's probably just me playing it at a 37% win rate. Kang the Conqueror is so bad. It's remarkable that this was considered a big bad on release. It's remarkable that I coped myself into getting it on day one. It's remarkable that I was a finalist in Twitch Rivals with a Kang the Conqueror deck because everyone's like, yo, no one was expecting your boy to be bringing Kang the Conqueror. But this card's a disaster, man. A complete disaster. It makes no sense. We've talked about reworking this card so many times. It's just not happening. It has to happen eventually, right, Cozy?
I had him in the Avengers, and even then, it's like, I would be like, okay, they're doing that, and then I would, you know, play a play around that or to counter that, and then they change the play up, or they keep the play the same. Like, I would even mess up even with the advantage that you have with them. Pixie's a better card of a bluff snap almost sometimes now at this point. Like, he's just lost, man. He's lost, and I feel like the devs are just kind of like, we don't want to mess with him either. Like, he's just this lost card in Snap, and it's going to be even more apparent. Like, you know, people want to play Marvel games and Marvel movies come out and things like that even more so. Hasn't been a lot of bangers lately, but Secret Wars comes out, the new Avengers, if Kang is still involved in all that, which I think they've teased, there's going to be more, but I think he's still going to be in there. People are going to want to see Kang. They're going to want to see him be better, and certainly it's not this.
I've been giving a lot of thought to Kang because I actually do like the card, even like, again, this is just pure coping, but I would make a suggestion. This is no TA change.
Yeah.
Change him to a 3 cost, 3-0 with the same effect. The reason why I say this is because that at least gives you the opportunity to buff Snap at like more reasonable situations. Because when I was playing Kang, I've played an obnoxious amount of Kang. And one of the most frustrating things is his most useful component is usually the buff Snap. It really is. That buff Snap is usually the best part. But the problem with it is that like there's often situations where you need to snap earlier in the game, not on turn 5 or 6. Like, if you have an advantage and you need to snap to secure that win, if Kang's a 3 cost it still has the same effect. If you're on turn three and you're able to snap to kind of put pressure on your opponent, that Kang snap is way more valuable. And so, like, yeah, I might cheat more cubes in the long run, but I think that if it's the same effect at three cost, it's at least a better card, and I don't think it's that damaging.
And you make them three so they can't play them after. I was even like a 0-0, like, who cares? Like, it doesn't matter at that point, but I guess you just don't want people playing them on one and two and bluff snapping on one and two, maybe. But yeah, I think three, I'm fine with that. I think that's okay, because yeah, five, especially, like, talk about a super dead draw at that point, right? Or if you top deck him and you play him, yeah, you get the chance to draw another card. You just don't get to do that at five. It's just awkward, and you have to have perfect timing. I agree. I think that's at least a start where they don't even have to put a lot of effort into it.
That's a key thing that's actually worth noting there. Yeah. Is the idea that if he's a three cost and you top deck him on three, four, or five, or six, now you have a greater spread where you can technically play him and get a draw. It's better and probably more fair than Kang is a five cost that always draws a card, because that's what another trash tier POS card on our list is going to try and do. But ultimately, I think at three cost, now you have more chances to pull that, hey, I get the Kang snap here and draw a card. Adds a little bit of RNG to what is already an absolute trash tier trash heap. And that takes us to number eight. And if it's not the time for Baron Mordo, I don't know when it's going to be. We got mill decks all over the place. So much emotional damage being caused by Baron, Yondu, and others. And Baron Mordo is nowhere to be found. When I'm talking about Baron, I'm talking about Baron Zemo, not Baron Mordo, because Baron Zemo is actually pretty good and the key component of these mill decks. And we have this weekend mission where, like, everyone's milling each other with Yondu and stuff. I ain't seen Baron out there because he's a trash heap of a card. Cozy, how much do you love Baron?
I feel like if I, like, threw a trivia contest and I had people name every card in Snap, he would have to be amongst the most forgettable. Like, probably, like, bottom three. Like, even Quicksilver, Angel, these cards, they're, at least, they're known for sucking or known for being trash, whatever. Baron just exists, he sucks, and this isn't it. This isn't it. I don't even think he's on their radar, too.
Yeah, and even in the movies, I'm like, yo, why is this guy so mad? Like, it was just like, it was one of those things, like, he even sucks in the movies, honestly.
The end, yeah, we don't want to spoil it, but I agree. He's an angry man. But yes, Baron is not, there's just not a lot to say. Some cards don't need a lot of explanation. He sucks.
Yeah, and this is, by the way, this is a post-buff Baron. He was even worse in the beta, and they buffed him. He's currently running a 36% win rate at less than 1% of the meta. Literally one of the most forgettable, most useless cards in Marvel Snap. Especially since Mobius and Mobius is out there who's work to just counter Baron. Number seven, and this is a card that I love from a flavor perspective. I love in the MCU, but our boy M'Baku just, I don't even know, man. Did he get buffed? Like, what was that? Like, I don't know, man. Now jumping to the lowest power location, similar to Proxima Midnight, except, of course, it has to be in your deck, still not in the hand. Like, what are we doing? Come on, make him jump from the hand. Cozy, please, M'Baku jumping from the hand. Because now we can have, like, a Silver Surfer deck with, like, Nakia, M'Baku, Okoye. Yes, we're full coping. But then at the end of the day, he jumps in. Dazzler's like, yo, M'Baku, and just jumps up, and everyone's losing their mind. Like, come on. There's so much hope for M'Baku. This just ain't it.
I think that card that runs out of your hand coming up from the internals, that's the tech that will help with that. And if he doesn't get fixed in that OTA or anything around there, he's dead forever. I think that's his last shot to be a decent card. We floated it. This is one for a year now. We floated, you know, plus one when he jumps out or anything of value. And now M'Baku, just garbage.
No, he's absolute garbage. Absolute garbage. Unplayable. Unplayable filth. And it's so sad because I love the character and I like the effect. And I've won some of the most hype games of my Marvel Snap career with M'Baku. Classic, like, weird world. What's the thing that randomizes your deck? I can't remember it all of a sudden. The location.
The location that... District X?
Yeah, District X. And then all of a sudden, like, you're like, oh, I lost. And then M'Baku comes out of the deck. It's like, yes! It's just, it's like one of the greatest moments that you could possibly experience. So yeah, what a trash heap of a card. Please buff M'Baku. 30% win rate. Just awful. And that brings us to number six, who is somehow worse than M'Baku and actually got buffed very recently, which is even more heartbreaking. It's another M. It's Mantis. Mantis, a 42% win rate and 0.2% of the meta. Literally no data on this card, borderline. What an absolute piece of garbage card. And yeah, you're copying a card from there, but I still hate the fact you got to guess the location. Look at this beautiful variant, by the way. What a shame. What a shame this card sucks so bad. Cozy, you need something.
She's got great variants, man. Like, all of her variants slap. She was a core cast of the Avengers. She... I feel A, she needs to definitely go to a one cost. I don't know why she's two. The effect is too risky for her not to be that. And I feel like if she's one, you can at least like throw her out there on some extra. You're still not putting her in your deck, though. And there's just not, again, there's definitely not enough reward here for, you know, what you get. There are going to be instances that are kind of cool and things that I did use her for, but Cable in every way, shape, and form is probably better.
It's always better. Yeah. Cable's good just for the disruption, for the information. Mantis is useless all the way around.
Yeah.
Imagine if Cable was, you had to guess the location. Garbage card.
Oh, my
card.
God. Yeah, terrible.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
No, so why does Mantis have to guess the location? Like, that's what I don't understand. Make Mantis a 2-2 that just copies their highest card played on turn two or whatever.
The Guardian's biggest fault is that, like, they just have to stay on theme with the, you know, guess the location thing. And I think it's a novelty that I'm done with.
I could see maybe it being like OP, you play it on like you do a limbo game and then you play it on turn six and then you copy their Red Hulk, which hopefully gets nerfed by then anyways. And then it's like, I can see where it can be super strong naturally, but at the same time, it's like, what are we doing here, man? Like, it's just, it's so unplayable. The statistics speak for itself. No one listening is like, oh man, I'm a Mantis believer. Okay. No, I just queued the comment for sure. There's someone in chat who's going to be an absolute Mantis truther, but this card sucks. Come on. We're out of control here if we're thinking Mantis is a good card.
Yeah. If they do like alliances, like not the guild thing, but if they were to say like, if you played all the Guardians of the Galaxy, they all get +3. It's kind of like those like OTAs that they released for a little bit. Like then you have a card that's like, you have the risk reward. You can get like the card and it's awesome, but she's part of a bigger picture potentially, you know, down the line. And I think it's possible that they lean that direction eventually, because it'd be cool to see in some of these iconic groups.
Yeah. And there's another iconic card who's iconically just as bad in Marvel Snap, which is so disappointing because I love Magic's brother, Colossus. I would love for Colossus to be a very legitimate card. Even during the X-Men event that you just alluded to, no one was playing Colossus. Because he still sucked. Absolutely literal iconic character in the Marvel Universe. Just an absolute poo-poo trash heap card. What do we even do at this point, Cozy?
No, we talked about him a couple weeks ago in the Snap, I think. And it was just like, hey, 5-cost, maybe make him with the power and give him the same effect. This is one of those head-scratchers right there with Captain America. Like, why aren't we buffing this guy? Why aren't we giving him a shot? And you guys know our feelings on him by now. Not good.
Yeah, you kind of like a 5-10 that can't be destroyed. Slap Shang-Chi right in the face, right?
Something of that nature. It's got to be something better than the 2-3 that he is, that's for sure.
And the power can't be reduced either, so that's a very necessary nerf to U.S. agents. I couldn't even finish the sentence.
I know, it's like, where are you going with that? Oh my God, yeah, he deserves to be on this list, by the way.
I know, that's another card, right? There were actual a lot of U.S. agent truthers that were like, yo, Alex, you're wrong. This card's not 1-star or 4-star. So I'm like, if you think I'm going to tell people like, yo, those 6K tokens get you've been saving up for 4 months, yeah, spend it on U.S. agent. That's a good choice. 6, oh my gosh, man.
God, yeah, ridiculous.
What a disaster that would have been.
What do we got up next, brother?
You know what? This card is my number one because it's like, come on, there's worse cards than this. And I was too emotional and disgusting. That's one way to describe Uatu the Watcher. I feel like I bring him up. Finished talking about him. We did a segment that was not even supposed to be about Uatu, and I somehow I shoehorned him into your discussion. I'm like, we're talking about Uatu. That's when I threatened to stare at the sun. Right? This card is so bad, man. I huffed a ton of hopium during Twitch drops. I made a deck with Uatu. I can't even finish my sentence. This pixel variant is offensively terrible. Cozy, like, what is this?
I feel like I've lived in deja vu, and I've lived through so many Uatu conversations. I almost feel like I've brought him up before, and that was your same reaction. He's just a little mad baby sitting on top of the world. Yeah, I have nothing to say on this card.
He's Uatu the trash heap.
I hate him.
I don't hate him. I love him. I love Uatu. Listen, during Twitch drops, there was a moment where I had Uatu, and it was the Abbey on the third location. And I set up two cards in advance of the Abbey. Oh, chef's kiss. I got a free draw. My opponent was tilted. And then they played Yondu, and what did they take? They took out Uatu the Watcher. He literally just he took one for the team, man. And I was like, yes. When someone baroned me and they took out Uatu, I just gave him like the beast emote,
oh,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which I paid like, you know, the $45 Canadian for, for those moments. And I was like, oh, ugh, snap. And they just like, too much emotional damage. They just left. It was, okay, listen, Uatu might, you know what? I'm changing my, no, Uatu's the best card in Marvel Snap.
Got nothing else on Uatu.
Come on. Okay. Obviously, I love Uatu more than Cozy does. You know, okay, number three, the top three worst cards in Marvel Snap. We're going to be talking about Arrow here. Arrow, absolute trash heap card. Nobody should like Arrow. Now Cozy's upset. What do you think, buddy?
Explain why.
I'm just joking. It's not Arrow. I just want to kind of dig at Cozy a little bit. Why can't you let me have my moment with Uatu? Why can't you at least say, Alex,
I care about the listeners. You know, listen, it's been 3-4 weeks now, and they're concerned about you too, I think, about the Uatu love. And you know what? As I talk about this, we're wasting their precious drive to work talking about this little angry baby.
Man, listen. One thing I will admit is not so long ago, I was watching some of my older videos. I don't know why I did this to myself, but I was watching some of my older videos, and there was an unironic video where I had Uatu in it, and I coped myself so hard. I was like, yes, play Uatu. This card's actually good. Location knowledge is important in Marvel Snap. I'm like, oh my God. I wish I knew what I knew now. Then I was like, oh man. But I've been on this train for too long. But you know what train I've never been on? The Quicksilver train. Because that card is legitimate actual poo-poo. That I don't think will ever get changed in Marvel Snap. I feel like it's like a new player trap where like, oh, it starts in your hand. That's got to be good. It's the reason why we don't have mulligans or anything like that. No, this card is poo, guys. Like, you should not be liking Marvel Snap. And I know right again, there's something like someone's like, no, where's my keyboard? I'm the Quicksilver truther out here. There's always one or two in the comments. This card is absolute poo. You should not be playing Quicksilver in any circumstance. Number three, Quicksilver.
I feel like if he was a pool three card, he would literally never be played. Like, if you'd even have access to him till later on, just a complete, again, there's cards that are so bad. I just have like nothing nice to say, which I think is the point, but also just railing them into he's awful. Don't play him, guys. Don't get trapped. Noob trap is what they say.
If you release this card right now, do you release him as like a 1-3 and then nerf him to a 1-2 like months later? How do you release a card like this?
You don't. This card? I mean, I guess you do in like the in Mortar and whatnot, but this would be the worst card by far to release. It would also be 6,000 tokens.
Yeah, of course. 6,000 tokens. Anybody that thinks Series 4 is a new release is just coping, man. Fine. Okay, so I would say that like Quicksilver as a 1-3 is actually maybe playable. No, you still don't think so? 1-3 starts in your hand?
I think you'd always be the worst card in the deck when you're trying to make it.
No, of course he's still the worst card in the deck, but like there might be like you could somehow convince yourself he's playable.
Maybe C3, maybe. Probably not.
You're just not feeling anything, eh? You're so angry today.
No, it's the bad cards. I mean, yeah, no,
it's so funny. I say you're so angry, and you let out like the funniest laugh I've heard in the longest time. It's like, well, we're talking about Quicksilver, and there's only two cards worse than Quicksilver in Marvel Snap, and one of them. It's just, I can't believe we're gonna bring this up. Because like Glenn's like, seriously, guys, seriously, this is it. We're going to the five cost. We've buffed this card twice now, and you guys are still saying it's the second worst card in Marvel Snap. Cozy, I'll give you the reins here on our boy, Adam Warlock.
Oh man, I would spend my days making a 12 card Uatu deck, 12 card Quicksilver. Heck it, I could play enough. Heck it, that's like the most PG thing I've ever said. Listen, I'd play Quicksilver and Domino all day, every day before Adam Warlock at 5/5. This is just a dead. This is a card that might as well not exist. In fact, I challenge Glenn or anyone on the team, remove him from the game and see how many people actually notice. I bet you it would take like if something like Darkhawk was gone, right? People like, where the hell is that guy? Where is he? Adam Warlock? I think it would take a couple days before someone...
No, I agree. If you absolutely removed Adam Warlock from the game, there's a good chance that no one would notice for like a while. And then someone on Reddit would be like, yo, is Adam Warlock not in the game anymore? And then eventually people would get it. Yeah, this card is so bad. It's so bad. And I understand like the, like, oh, we got to protect card draw and stuff like that. Here's an interesting thought. You're holding card draw like so sacred, and yet like you're letting people mill the out of my deck like nonstop. It's like, what are we even doing here? This 5/5 Adam Warlock is so absolutely cringe. It is bad. It's awful. It can't be in its final form. But I don't know if they ever actually buff this card to like you consistently able to draw. Like, I was one of the ones that coped playing Adam Warlock in like a Bast deck, where on turn two, if he's a 2/3 card, like it's like snappable. It's so unbelievably good, right? At least he was playable then. Like, what? Like, he's just totally unplayable now. He's awful, awful.
What's worse than him?
There's only one card, and you already had it on the screen. You already spoiled the entire segment earlier on. Listen, there's something to be said about Angel being the worst card in Marvel Snap. Because, like, I think what makes it even worse is that they buffed it. And it's still just absolute just trash heap. Like, oh, okay, I'm playing a bot. Like, that's what Angel is. Angel is the, oh, okay, this is a bot. Like, that's exactly what Angel is.
I haven't seen Angel in a lifetime. Outside of a bot, yeah. Haven't seen him in a lifetime. He's in an archetype that's so incredibly tight as it is. One of the, he's the original X-Men. It's just, he's bad. He deserves
I like
better.
How you use the word tight, because I was, as you were talking, I was looking at his like 12 pack. I was like, man, like, first of all, like, how many muscles does one person need in their armpit? Like, what does that actually power? Like, do you actually punch from your armpit? Like, I don't understand why those muscles are so jacked. And also, how does he even put that suit on, man? There's so many questions I have, because his suit has like a headpiece on it too, but it looks like a one piece. I don't understand the physics of this suit at all. Definitely tight the way I would describe it. This card is terrible. It's so bad. Like, I don't. You can't even pretend to put it into a deck with a straight face and be like, yeah, this actually makes the deck. No, it never makes the deck better. There is no version of Destroy that ever wants Angel in it. Like, it's just so unbelievably awful. And it's painful that it's the post-nerf, the post-buff version that still sucks. And this is like, this is just, it kicks M'Baku in the balls because this is the tech we need for M'Baku. Like, M'Baku with this stat line, with this effect is better, no?
Yeah, it's the same thing as having the M'Baku fix with the plus one potentially. Like, you got to give it plus power if it does the effect. I think that's the only way. And even then, it's probably not played. I don't think it's going to be played. And listen, we've passed the sale of new card experience over here. I think he's not even that.
No, not even that. And but what is that? Is our Snapchat mailbag. We have a bunch of questions that came into this week, and Cozy and I, we're going through a few of them here. And if you have a question you'd like to ask Cozy and I, let us know in the comments down below. Ask with the mailbag tag. And we actually really do like questions that aren't even related to Marvel Snap. We like talking just for the sake of talking, Cozy and I. And that brings us to our first question of the week, which actually is all about Marvel Snap. Bree brings us a card idea regarding extra energy, and it reads, ongoing, neither player's energy can exceed the current round number. This is an idea of attacking like these ramp style decks while also attacking the Hope Summers list. I don't know what kind of stats would have to be applied to, but Cozy, what do you think of the idea of a card that would fix the mana of both players to the round number?
It reminds me of Jean Grey. I think it would be weak ultimately unless it had good stats, because if you're doing it to both of you guys, right? Like, your opponent doesn't have to worry about it, so they're going to edge you out on turn three or whatever it is. So I fear for that. It would need pretty good stats. I don't hate the ability. I don't hate the ability. But even with the ability, I don't know how much it's played because you're only targeting so many decks, and then it also takes up a turn. So does that mean it could be fair to bring to the game? Probably.
There is one major synergy with this question, though. Like, a card that would fix the mana cost per round, it's a Havoc card, man. Because then Havoc can't drop the card. So Havoc would be like the power generation probably behind that type of deck, which would be kind of cool because, like, even though Havoc is seeing some experimentation, it would be cool to see some Havoc getting some daylight. But anyways, we had discussed the idea of like ramp counters to some degree, and that was an idea from Just Bree. The next question comes from Matthew, who is a new player and is asking about the season pass cards and when they do get released. So Matthew's asking, do battle pass lock cards ever become available again? Matthew, this is a very common question that Cozy and I get on our videos, and you'll be happy to know that if you don't get the season pass card, the next month they're added to the season 5 pool and made available in the token shop at 6,000 tokens. So if you happen to miss something like a Hope Summers and it's super meta impactful, then you do have the opportunity to get it then. But we will note that if you're going to spend any money on the game, generally speaking, Cozy, what do you think? The season pass is generally the most value, correct?
Yeah, of course. And the gold pass.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The season pass generally for like the $10, you get the card, which is a series 5 card. You're getting your most bang for your buck there, because generally speaking, tokens are expensive. Card acquisition is generally expensive. You do get your best bang for your dollar in the season pass. North Star Jacobs asks our next question, and it reads, in addition to being an avid Marvel Snap player, I'm also an avid baseball card collector. The Snapchat is actually one of my go-to listening options for when I'm organizing my collection. So my question is, what physical or digital card games did you guys play before Marvel Snap? And do you still play any of them? And are you collectors of any sort? I bring up this question, Cozy, because my wife was actually, we had a party for my daughter this weekend, and she was cleaning up like the basement a bit. Mm-hmm. And she was like, Alex, do you realize you have like thousands and thousands of physical cards stacked across multiple tables, boxes of unopened booster boxes? And so I'm like, I know, I have a problem. I collect everything, Cozy.
Yeah. I'll answer the physical one. I think I've done answered the digital before. The physical, yeah. So OG Pokemon cards is where I like my love for that started. And then I got into collecting sports cards when I was young for sure too. But nowadays I just finished In fact, Alex was with me when I was looking at some of the OG base set Pokemon cards, even at PAX East. Still have a love and chase for nostalgia. And that's like the main one. And then I play other, you know, there's other card. Honestly, I'm a sucker for card games. And so, like, I have to almost limit myself or else I will try to collect them all. Like, we even just tested Star Wars Unlimited and I, like, wanted to go all in on that. And just because I like opening packs, cracking packs.
Yeah, I'm an avid collector of all cards. Actually, right beside me, I just realized I do have a first edition Pikachu here.
Beautiful.
Right beside me. I got it from my daughter. I bought this like 15 years ago, actually, so I have no idea what this is worth.
It's a red cheeks, too. It's rare. It's good.
Is this actually rare? It has yellow cheeks. Is that
it's
good
yellow
cheeks.
I thought it had red cheeks. Red cheeks is rarer. If it's a first, it's not a first edition. It's just a Pikachu. It's good. It's fair. It's
okay. Oh, it's not first edition, so I just got ripped off.
By your daughter?
No, I bought this like a long time ago, and I gave it to my daughter.
I don't know. It might be. Hold it up to the camera more. I'm going to see if it's the first edition.
I don't have an autofocus, so it's just going to be super blurry.
Now I can tell just with that. It's not a first edition. It has this is sick, though. This is not a first edition. Right here, though, is how you know it's a first edition. There's a little number right on that boy right there. But yeah, this is PSA 9, man. This is a...
Oh, so what the hell do I have? I have just like a useless Pikachu.
You got a Pikachu. It's a couple bucks.
A couple bucks. Man, I thought I was sitting on a gold mine here. No. Yeah, I'm just throwing this thing in the garbage then. All right. But yeah, I collect a ton of cards. I used to play Hearthstone a lot too. Tons of Magic. I've been collecting Lorcana cards just for, I don't know why. I have like a right behind me, actually, I have a booster box. You can kind of see it right there. That's the first chapter booster box. It's hard to point. It's right over there in the corner that I bought just because like I can have it and like, you know, maybe one day it's worth, you know, giving away or something like that. And I also love Pokemon cards. My daughter and I, we've talked about how we crack Pokemon cards all the time. And it's really fun. It's really fun to collect cards. And I mean, it's got a tooks in me. Like any collectible card game coming out, Altered TCG is coming out, which was one of the most kickstarted games in TCG history. I'm super, super excited for that as well. I mean, it's a TCG with some digital collection elements. And at the end of the day, I got to tell you, I'm just an avid collector. And I think that's something that Cozy and I, you know, at PAX, I literally followed Cozy around as he was like going through all different booths buying. He's like, can I get a price on that Chansey over there? Oh, I need that Squirtle too. And like, it was actually awesome. You had an app that was tracking your original collection and everything, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I love it too, man. Big fan of collecting cards.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, surprise, surprise. The guys on the Snapchat love collecting cards. Thank you so much for watching, everyone. We really appreciate you. If you have an opportunity, leave us a review on the podcast platform of your choice. It means a lot to us. It supports us tremendously.
Appreciate you guys hanging out. We got another great week of the Snapchat. Until the next one, happy snapping, guys.